it makes you realize you spend your entire life. I spent the first 30 some odd years of my life wanting to be the best play-by-play guy in the world. And you realize that's nothing, like, be a good dad. And then that's what's going to be your legacy.
Welcome to The Art of Fatherhood, a podcast that takes you on the journey of fatherhood. Now here's your host, Art Eddy.
This week's The Art of Fatherhood podcast is being brought to you by Movember.
We are Movember, the leading charity changing the face of men's health. Mental health and suicide prevention, prostate cancer and testicular cancer, we're taking them all on. Movember is more than a month. We are a year-round men's health movement because taking care of your physical and mental health is important 365 days a year. Movember knows that being a dad can come with some specific challenges, like the meltdown in the supermarket, the crocodile tears before bed, and the glued-to-the-screen routine. So we've created Family Man, a free online tool featuring proven parenting strategies developed alongside leading global child behavior experts and designed for dads. The interactive episodes help you navigate common, tricky parenting situations built with advice from experts on how to look at parenting from a new perspective. Learn by doing and broaden your parenting skills with Family Man. Visit familyman.movember.com and check out the free modules with actionable parenting advice that works. That's familyman.movember.com.
What's up, everybody? Art Eddy here for the Art of Fatherhood podcast. And on the line, I'm very happy to have Sean Grandy. Thanks for taking the time to chat with me, Sean. How you doing, sir?
I'm hanging in, man. I'm hanging in. That's all we can do, right?
Yeah, no doubt, man. Looking forward to chatting with you about, of course, basketball, calling Celtics games and all that good stuff. But love talking with guys about fatherhood and just talking to them about their fatherhood journey. So when you found out you were going to be a dad, Sean, what was going through your mind, sir?
Is this really happening, right? Is this... Yeah. Your whole life, particularly in my very strange world, is very regimented, right? There's a ton of travel. There are patterns. And I always flashback. I was a huge West Wing guy, right? And there's a tremendous line when Toby's character, Richard Schiff, is going to become a dad. And he says, I like who I am. And I don't want that to change. I like being good at the things I'm good at. And you realize, my son's going to be 10 in October, and the journey that we've been through and custody battles and court and everything that has led me to this spot, it makes you realize you spend your entire life. I spent the first 30 some odd years of my life wanting to be the best play-by-play guy in the world. And you realize that's nothing, like, be a good dad. And then that's what's going to be your legacy going forward. And the other thing's going to be.
Love all those answers, Sean. And again, like when you talk about West Wing and Toby's character, just as, my wife and I started watching it, like we ended up finishing the series last year, and seeing Toby like in the hospital and like just talking to his kids, like, oh, the softer side of Toby. And if people know the show and know how he's a gruff character, and all of a sudden he's like sees his twins and he's like turns to this ball of mush. Like, if anybody doesn't know what parenting's like, it's right there, right?
There's no question. There's an amazing line later on. It's funny. It's in that episode, because what we're talking about is when he has to step down as president because his daughter has been kidnapped. And I realized, everything, all the things that I'm finally starting to speak about now for the first time that I've been through the last few years, is there's a great line in there, which is, I think it's, an extraordinary act of patriotism and leadership, but it's a rather ordinary act of fatherhood. And that's really what everything I've been through the last few years is. It seems an extraordinary ordeal and whatever, but it's what you do as a parent.
No doubt, sir. Definitely agree, Sean. And, you're talking about being a play-by-play. You want to be the best you can be, right? And that, obviously, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, hard work, and determination. So for me, just as an outsider, I think that you're going to be using those values instilling to him. He's, 10 years old and all that great stuff. And he's still listening to you, right, before he thinks he knows it all. So talk a little bit about some of the other values you're looking to instill into him as he's growing up.
Well, I think, hard work is really important. Caring about other people. And I think there's nothing of all the elements of fatherhood that are rewarding. When you see your child, when you see your son caring for someone else without, like, on his own, that's an amazing moment. We talk about score, the regular dad moments. Like this year, he played hockey for the first time. and he was learning. He wasn't as good as the other kids like he is in the other sports. And late in the season, he scored his first goal, and I'm there, and I've got the video, and I've run it, like I've watched it 1,000 times. So I have to edit out my like screaming insanely. Like, who's that crazy guy? It's ruined by some crazy guy is screaming when this guy scores a goal. I don't know what that's about. But there are the moments of humanity that you just see when he cares about other people. And it's just, that's what really grabs you, that he sees he's got, a dad and who works really hard, and hopefully he appreciates, he understands that that's an important part of life, but that he just cares about other people is what I would put at the top of that list.
Yeah, I mean, now more than ever, just in the environment and the world that our kids are growing up in, you want empathy and compassion and caring, right? It just seems like the art of conversation is gone. You're wrong, I'm right, absolutist, like, it's black and white when it's not that way, right? And talking, instilling care and just decency and just being there for others is perfect. Another thing too, just, watching him score that first goal, like I have two daughters, 13 and 10, and I've been like coaching for different sports, even like basketball and baseball. Sure, I'm good with that. Did like volleyball right before this pandemic hit, and I'm like, I don't even know what I'm doing, but I want to be there for them, right? But watching them score their first goal was, or for my daughter, her first basket was great in the game. But when she, like the second year, her and her friend, Mia, they were kind of like captains, and they were, kind of run stuff. During a close game, the other coach and I were talking about something, but then the two girls, my daughter and her friend, just took over and be like, this is what we need to do. Dad, like, I think I have this great like game plan. I heard this great play because I think I caught something. And I was like, on so many levels, I was so proud of her because I'm like, she's taking initiative. She's learning about the game. I'm like, awesome. So for you, when, when he's scoring that first goal, it's not really the goal. It's just everything that led up to it, right?
Oh, there's no question. I mean, just, watching him, coaching him. I coach him in baseball, and you have those moments of, which is an interesting dynamic, right? When you're coaching your own son and you're trying not, he almost gets the short end of the stick because you're trying so hard to not favor him and spend time with the other kids. And one of the reasons I did it in the first place was to get more time with him. And then you end up, spending all the time with all the other kids, but you're there and you're around. He sees that, which is a good thing. But 2 years ago, before that, last year was a pandemic year that ruined all sports. But the year before, we go to we win our league championship in East Cambridge here in Boston. We go to the Cambridge City Championship, the Mayor's Cup. No team from the East has been to the finals and whatever. We're up by a run going to the final inning, and we have this sort of calamitous display, and my best player throws to the wrong base. We lose the game. And my son is catching at the time, and he just bursts into tears, and he runs right to me. And I'm just like holding my son, like I've destroyed my son. Like, now he's in tears from playing sports. And I texted our coach, Brad Stevens, the coach of the Celtics. Like, when that night was over, I just texted him, the coaching sucks. Like, I just can't take it. It's like, fatherhood's one thing, but coaching is another.
Yeah. And for me, like, I don't know if you've coached, your son's teams, different teams with another coach. I sometimes let the other coach my daughter because she'll listen to him more than she'll listen to me, right? For both my daughters, right? They'll be like, Dad. And then the coach can say the exact same thing, and they'll be like, okay, I'll try that. I'm like, what?
My son has my sense of humor, and it's a little bit irreverent, and I give him slack around the house because basically it's the Damon Wayans always said as a comedian. He said, listen, I'm a comedian. If it's funny, you're not in trouble. Like, that's the rule in my house. The worst thing, the most I could ever say is go up to your room, work on your timing. Like, that's the worst that I could do. But it translates sometimes. He has to learn in the other environments. Like, when I'm the coach, there can't be a smart ass remark back in front of the other kid. So, like, he's had to learn that dynamic is different, when dad is the coach versus when dad's the dad.
Nice. Love that. Two more questions before we kind of get into, three more questions before we kind of get into, sports and your great career so far. And I think certain answers you've kind of responded to me in my questions kind of maybe reveal it, but what is something that your son has taught you about life in general, about yourself?
I think I don't even know where to begin with that because it's been so much. It is very much what they say about reliving your own childhood. And I tried very hard with sports because I'm in it and it's around and it's on TV and I'm working I didn't push it at all. So he had to sort of come to it naturally. I think making mistakes and having patience with your mistakes. I was never good with that. I was a super competitive kid. My partner, Cedric Maxwell, who I've done Celtic games with for 20 years, North Carolina legend. His favorite story about me as a kid is that I was so ultra competitive. If I was playing Monopoly, which now my son loves to play, being out of the blue, he just fell in love with Monopoly. When I would play Monopoly, and if I had Park Place and somebody landed on a boardwalk, they wouldn't buy it because they knew the night would just be ruined and it wasn't worth it. So they would just, you know, which did not teach me the lesson. But so I had no, you know, patience for myself, and I've got to be a major league announcer by the time I'm 30, and you can't make mistakes and all this other stuff. And you realize when you watch it from birth on that mistakes happen, they're the only way you learn, and to sort of make him understand that it's not the end of the world. Like, mistakes happen, unless it's the championship game and it's an error in the bottom of the ninth after everything we worked on. But it's that has, you see yourself, it's a little mirror, right, into yourself, the person you became and why you became that way, and a sort of a chance to, not so much a do-over of how you were raised, because your parents did the best that they could and their parents did the best they could, but it's you're trying to just sort of sharpen it for the next generation and be able to, you know, the things as a grown-up that you don't like about yourself, you can sort of figure out where they were formed and, you know, try to stop it from happening.
100%. Yeah. Spot on right there. Thanks for sharing that. And, you know, when I ask this question, I always think of Jim Brewer, and he's like, when I've asked him this, he's like, my kids don't care as long as they have roof over their head and food. But like, your son's into sports, and the people that, you know, he might get to see and all that stuff is probably cool, right? You got some cool dad street cred among his buddies, I'm taking. But what does your son think about your profession, sir?
Well, again, every kid, you only know what you know, right?
Yeah.
So my son has been flying on the Celtics plane since he was 3. So it is it doesn't matter to him. It's like, you know, when Coach Brad, especially now in this year, in the pandemic year, I'm doing a lot of my stuff with Brad Stevens from home, doing the pregame interviews and things like that. So Jack, he'll talk to Jack for a while, and, you know, Jack just like pops on. And he's like, you know, hey, Coach Brad. You know, it's a funny story where we're on the plane and we're walking on the plane, and Brad Stevens says, Jack, why don't you ask a question in the pregame, you know, interview tomorrow night? I think we're in Washington, you know, one of the trips. It was, by the way, it was the perfect job for, you know, educating and for homeschooling, which we did for a couple of years. Like, I can bring, you know, kids are sitting in school reading about the Washington Monument and the Smithsonian, and I'm able to bring him there because I'm lucky enough to have this job. But so the coach is like, well, why don't you ask? So I bring him into the pregame locker room, and he thinks of the question, largely thought of it on his own. And, you know, our coach is very, very good with the media. He's very good at seeing questions and answering the right thing. You never see, oh, Brad Stevens said this or Brad Stevens said that. So we get to this part of the pregame conversation. I said, well, you wanted my son to ask a question, so here it is. And my son asked this question that he had largely thought of himself. And he goes, do you think a girl will ever play in the NBA? And that's, you know, it's a great, I think he was 5 at the time. That's a great 5-year-old question. And it's the ultimate softball. And coach and Brad goes, well, you know what? They have their own league. It's called the WNBA. And I'm sitting there going, that's not a good answer, Brad. That's like, if you had said that 60 years ago, like, why aren't African-American players playing? Well, they have their own league to play in, whatever. I'm like, and I'm thinking, oh my God, my son's question is going to start trending worldwide to get Brad, you know, in trouble for all those things. But he's, you know, he's on the plane, like Brian Scalabrine walked by, and my son, they go, Scal. I'm like, okay, can we have Mr. Scalabrine at least while you're 5? Can we have a little bit of that? But he doesn't. No, I've got a picture. I got a million, obviously, pictures. Some of them are behind me of Jack being on the row with me and sitting courtside with me and being on the. I have a picture of him on the plane, and it was, I think, February. So the new baseball cards had just come out. So he's sitting there opening packs of baseball cards with this meal on this catered meal on the Celtics team plane. And I'm like, dude, you're peaking at 7. I don't know where to go with this. I tell the story. I bring him to a Red Sox game. I think we had just lost in the playoffs in 2018, maybe. I bring him to a Red Sox game, and a friend of mine had the special dugout seat, so you're already like VIP behind the thing. I knew one of the guys on the field, one of the regular media people. He's like, hey, you want to come down on the field? And I'm like, okay. So we step under the ropes. Now we're beyond the VIP. And my son at six, seven years old is on the field. Red Sox are out there. Xander Bogaerts ends up throwing a ball. I went to approximately 1,000 major league games in my life. Never really came close to catching a foul ball. Xander Bogaerts just rolls this ball in from the infield. It lands right at my son's feet. And he's got his Xander Bogaerts ball. All right, that's okay. We walk into the dugout. It's too bad I can't do the reveal because I can't reach the picture from where I am. But we go into the – he's like, well, you want to go into the dugout? Like, okay. Take my son into the dugout at Fenway Park at 7 years old. So we go into the – and so we go into the dugout. And there's Alex Cora is the Red Sox manager. And he's talking to me. I hadn't met him yet. And I get introduced to him. We're talking about the Celtics or whatever. And Alex Cora is sitting with somebody else at the time. And it's Pedro Martinez. So my son is now – he's so – and that means nothing to him.
Yeah.
The best part of the story is – so I'm talking to Pedro. He's the greatest guy. And Pedro, we're talking about him. I'm talking to him about doing TV and all this other stuff. He's asking about the Celtics. Blah, blah, blah. Conversation goes on. And I'm like, Jack, this is Pedro. And he wasn't unimpressed, but he didn't know. He doesn't know that Pedro is Pedro. Yeah. And at this time, a guy comes around the corner wheeling this big giant thing of Gatorade for the dugout. And Jack marks out and goes, Gatorade! And he was so much more excited to see the big thing of Gatorade than Pedro Martinez sitting in the dugout. I turned to Pedro and said, that's a pretty cool age, right? When he's more interested in the but now I've got this, you know, I got this awesome. I'll send you the picture if you want to put it up. Yeah. But here's all of a sudden my son. I think what I put on Facebook that night was some people on their days off go to the zoo to see a goat. I took my son to Fenway and we ran into one. But that's an example of he doesn't know. If I sensed ever that he was getting spoiled, like he's spoiled by the definition of spoiled.
Yeah.
But not if he ever acted above because of it or whatever. And I'll tell you one more just because these are fun stories. So this is my
all time. I love these. These are great.
Yeah, this is the best one with connecting with my life. So I bring him to Celtic games from time to time. This time he's going to preschool. So this is the Isaiah Thomas year. So 16, 17. So he's five. His preschool is pre-K is in Charlestown, which is right across the river from the garden. So I go pick him up from school. And he's a huge Isaiah Thomas fan. I've got these great videos of him waking up the next morning and seeing the box scores. And his eyes would look across and he would see Isaiah's point total and his eyes would pop out of his head. We walk towards the garden over the bridge. And here's some guy walks, some big fat white guy with an Isaiah Thomas jersey on walking by. And my son goes, Isaiah Thomas jersey. I'm like, that's right. It's Isaiah Thomas jersey. A lot of people are going to have him. So we walk into the building and I go in the back way, obviously with my job and through the back stairs. And the back corridor, my clothes, my suits and stuff at the time, and my game shoes, trade secret, right? I wear sneakers into the game, and then all my stuff is like right there at the garden. I put it on and take it off as soon as the game's over and go back to regular life. We're walking in the corridor back towards the Celtics locker room. Somebody's passing us. Somebody's walking towards us and walks by, and he looks down at Jack and goes, hey, man. Jack's like, hi, and keeps walking. And I stop him. I say, that was the Isaiah Thomas. That's the actual, but he didn't have his uniform on or whatever. I'm like, that's the actual guy. He goes, I know, but I didn't know what's, oh my God. So he was like super excited to see some guy in the street in Isaiah Thomas jersey. He walks by the actual Isaiah Thomas. And that's the reaction. So it's funny because it's sort of been taken away from him, right? Because of the pandemic. I haven't traveled. I've lived my life on airplanes, which made being a dad, particularly in my specific conflict situation, very difficult traveling all the time. I've lived on airplanes for 20 years. I haven't set foot on a plane since March 11th, 2020. I mean, at some point that's going to change and next year we'll all go back to our lives. But the other result of that, so he hasn't been able to travel with me. He hasn't been able to come to games. We're just getting fans back in there now. So the life that he did have before has been a little bit taken away, but it's been an unusual one. You know, you get special. I grew up in New York, going to Mets games at Shea Stadium. I didn't have money to bribe the. I didn't have any money to bribe the ushers to sneak to good seats. So you'd scout out these open seats for four innings. Like that seat's open. That seat's been open the whole game. Try to sneak in. Ushers right on it. Kicks you out. I know people now, friends of friends, and at Citi Field they have these like super VIP seats right behind home plate. And a couple of times a year we get them, and you're like in the third or fourth row. As I said, I've never gotten a ball in my life, and here. outfielder will throw the ball in after catching the third out, and it rolls all the way to the ball boy, and he'll usually flip it to a kid. And Jack's gotten a couple of those just from like in play major league balls. And I'm like, okay.
Sean, your examples of like, you know, Isaiah Thomas, Pedro, and the Gatorade and all that other stuff, that is like the Mount Everest of when you get your kid a toy for Christmas and he wants the box instead of the toy itself, right?
No question whatsoever. But to me, it just goes back to, you know what you know,
yeah,
you have what you have. He's grown up around it. I don't think he's really been affected by it. I mean, it's, I think to some degree he knows it's cool. Plus, remember, Eric, he's 9 and a half now. Let's say everything stays the same. I'm still doing this job 2, 3, 4 years from now. That's different when you're 12 and 13,
yeah,
and you got your friend. I think he's just, or he was homeschooled for a couple of years. This is his first full year in school since pre-K. So you're just coming across those other kids like, wait a minute, your dad's who? And so that will eventually, I think it'll help me out when the inevitable teenage thing happens. I'm one of the lucky people in the world with everything I've been through. I know that stepmom, step-parent situation can sometimes be difficult. I've been blessed beyond belief. Actually, not blessed, because I'm the third wheel with, you know, my wife and Jack have just been so tight from the beginning. But as I often remind her when they're all snuggled on the couch and happy, it's like, remember this day, because 3 or 4 years from now, it's like, you're not my mom. Get, you know, whatever. Yeah. Like all the bad stuff, all the teenage stuff that's coming. So enjoy every moment.
No doubt. I think enjoy every moment could be the answer to this last question before we get into sports and all that good stuff, even though we're kind of like blending sports and fatherhood. But what is one big piece of advice you'd offer to new dads? Listen to this.
Everyone will tell you it goes by fast. That's the number one thing I heard. The first year does not go by fast. Ever, ever sleep. No one tells you that part. Hopefully you don't have a job that where your job is at night. So you're often getting home from work at 2 or 3 in the morning, and he didn't care when he was a baby, because at 6:30, 7 the next morning, he's, you know, up and ready to go. But be present. I think to some degree, everything I went through made me more present, because there was a threat of losing him. There was that you're fighting for something, so that you're always conscious of it. That I think, a regular, you know, if you're lucky enough to be a regular dad and you get to be around your kids all the time, be present in the little moments, even when it's a crazy busy day and whatever. There's usually something to come out of the day. You know, we have to go to work and there's deadlines and all this other stuff. You know, be aware of something that happened on that day. And I've always been very conscious of time. I know now, 9 and a half, he still grabs my hand a lot. Like sometimes because he's on roller skates and he doesn't want to fall, but I'll take it. But just in general, every time, even to the last year plus, every time he grabs my hand across the street to do anything, I think this could be it. This could be the last time. So be present, because there's a lot of last times. It does get better and better. It absolutely does. But he's only going to be 2 once. He's only going to be 5 once.
Yep.
So, you know, be present in those moments. I mean, I don't think that's original advice, but certainly having lived it, I think if you're a new dad, I would say this to you, because I was almost 40 when I became a dad. So that's a long time as a grown-up not being a dad. And people say, you don't understand. You can't understand it unless you're a dad. I think intellectually you can. The same way, if you stand next to a roller coaster and you look up at it, you have an idea of what it would be like. You have an idea. Intellectually, you could probably write a good essay as to what being on that roller coaster is like. But it's not the same as being actually on it and experiencing it. And that's what, you know, so don't let anyone tell you, you don't know because you're not a father. You have an idea, but, you know, get on the ride and strap in, and you'll have different experiences to talk about.
Well, you know, Sean, you're talking about like maybe it's, you know, time goes by fast and cherish it. It might be cliche, but cliches are there for a reason. But I love the fact, again, another great example of like taking it to another level. Like you could understand what a roller coaster is like once you're on a totally different thing. So appreciate that. Calling Celtics games and just calling sports and just doing that. And I remember I visited my friend in Virginia, and we were at the Virginia Sports Museum, and you could do a couple famous calls, right? My friend and I were sounded like blubbering idiots trying to like talk about like someone stealing third and going, you know, like getting home. And it's, and I think we take it for granted what you do on a daily basis, right? And because you got to be there in the moment, you got to, there's so many things, or it comes like second nature to you now. But like for you, what is like one of the biggest misconceptions when someone's watching, oh, I can do that? I think people say they can do that for your job and then also like stand-up comedian. So what is like some of the misconceptions you can share with my audience, man?
I've certainly said that with every coach I've ever been with, you know, whether it's Doc Rivers or Brad Stevens or Jimmy O'Brien mm-hmm. or the late Flip Saunders in Minnesota, college coaches, Dan Henning. I remember doing this, you know, at every level. The one thing coaches and play-by-play guys will always have in common is that everyone thinks that they can do your job. There's a one school of thought that says you have to do something in life, whatever it is, you have to do it 1,000 times before you become an expert at it, which is why probably why you have to be a dad or a mom for 1,000 days, right? Before you become an expert at parenting. I think it is, it's a very natural fan reaction. Part of my job now, and maybe, again, being through what I've been through the last few years, I could take Twitter with a little more grain of salt about what's important and what's not, because it's nasty on there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, as we're talking now, the Celtics are having this brutal year to get through, which is just very difficult. Also, under the shadow of being in Boston now, which is different from being in Boston 20 years ago, because, you know, when my first year with the Celtics, I did 3 years of TV in Minnesota. I come to Boston. Celtics hadn't been in the playoffs in 7 years. They go to the conference finals that year after not having been in the playoffs with Paul Pierce and Antoine Walker. People wanted to have a parade for that team. In fact, Boston had a parade 2 years earlier for a player who won a championship on another team. Because Ray Bourque had won the Stanley Cup, and they actually had a thing for him because it was like, well, we're never going to win a championship in Boston. Now, understand the shadow you're in here, where that team went to the conference finals. Last year, Celtics team went to the conference finals, and people were like, conference finals? We're about championships here, because what happens, this is why people hate Boston right now, you have 6 Super Bowls, 4 World Series, an NBA title, a Stanley Cup, and suddenly it's like the high of that, it's, you need conference finals, doesn't do it for you anymore. When I was growing up as a Mets fan or whatever, but your baseball team got to the league championship series, that was a monster deal. It's like, I'm not going to school today. I remember sitting in school, the famous game 6 in 86 with, you know, when the Mets came back at 16 inning game and they win the National League championship in 86, that started, I was in high school and I'm in class at 3 o'clock when that game started. And we're like listening on the radio, like writing down for everybody in the class, what's happening in the first inning. Cause that was everything. And now, you know, I guess that's the, sort of the natural progression of it. Plus the, you know, the natural Twitter, you know, the nasty world we live in. It's a, you know, it's a Fox CNN world, right? Everyone wants to argue about everything for no reason, even when they're not. I post numbers sometimes on my Twitter feed. If I'm doing a game on radio, I don't have TV graphics. So sometimes I'll post people want to argue with those, like attach an opinion to it so they can take the other opinion. So I think that, I mean, the question was about my job. I imagine most people think they can do, and listen, when the Celtics lose to Oklahoma City, the youngest team in the league, and on a 14 game losing streak, everyone thinks, man, I could play 5 minutes. I could get, you know, people, when I was a kid, they used to dress up to go to the US Open in New York. You dress in your tennis clothes. Like, what was some comedian said? I remember some comedian doing like, if Jimmy Connors turned an ankle, what do you think they're going to, hey, Barry, come on down here and play McEnroe a couple of sets. Right. Like, so, you know, be a fan.
Yeah.
Think what you think. I've spent, you know, more than half my life now dedicated to my craft and trying to be, as I said, a lead in the world at it. And if you think you can do it, if fans think they can do it, if young people want to do it, good. Do it. Practice it. Become great at it. Because I grew up, I was raised, you know, my parents raised me and the play-by-play announcers raised me. That's how I grew up, watching the Mets and watching the Rangers and watching the football games and watching whatever. And I spent all that time as a kid with announcers, and they made moments and memories for me. And that's, you know, that's what I try to do now. I try to, when I go to games every night, when it becomes work, yeah, I got another game. We have 5 games in 7 nights. I got to go to work. I've got this thing with my son. I'd rather be doing whatever. I always have tried to, and it's hard when there were no fans, this went away. I always try to find a kid in the crowd to make eye contact, to just keep my eye on him and remember that was me at Shea Stadium at Madison Square Garden at 8 years old, at 9 years old, dreaming of a life, you know, in professional sports. And, you know, I've been lucky enough to make that happen.
You're lucky enough, but also there's a lot of talent for doing it for 20 straight years, man. Like, there's some longevity. It's like the Tom Brady of play-by-play, right? I think this is a great question to ask you because you've seen different eras and all that. Like, me growing up, I'm in my 40s now. Jordan, Bird, like the 80s and 90s. Pretending you're like Mike or Larry or whatever the case may be. I just felt like that was such a fun era. And I think probably kids, this, you know, my kid generation, they think, you know, Steph Curry and LeBron and all that stuff is, and it's generational. But one of the things, I know it's sports talk radio. I know it's something that, you know, you chat around with at the barbershop or at a bar, whatever the case may be. Like, all right, who's on your Mount Rushmore? Who's the top five players in this sport of all time? I just think like it's really hard because especially the 80s and 90s, elbows be flying and all that stuff and it wouldn't be a technical. Now there's an elbow flying, it's a technical. Is it kind of really hard to like differentiate like who's on the Mount Rushmore just because of the different eras? Or what's your take on that?
Of course it is. And that's what makes it a beautiful, listen, it's the art of the unwinnable argument.
Yeah.
That's what, and how can you say this guy is, you know, I want this ball player is great. Well, yeah, well, you didn't see Cap Anson play in 1921. And he was, of course you can't. How do you argue that? So that is the beauty of sports talk to me. And that's, and I came up through sports talk and I get it. And the division in it, when sports radio first started, it and play-by-play were sort of connected together. It was, this is how sports has been done. And you're talking, but the game is at night and you talk about it the next day. And eventually it evolved into something completely different, which was sort of guy radio and talking head argue about a point radio. And it separated from play-by-play. And you had to, you know, but as someone who was on those shows a lot and spent many years working on them, you know, when I was much younger, you have to be able to speak both languages.
Yeah.
So you have to be able to go and have that argument about who is the greatest of all time. And as we're talking this week, Dr. J came out with his top 10 players of all time in the NBA and he left LeBron off it. And so that set off a, you know, listen, it is not hard to get Twitter started. It's like really easy to do. And it often becomes the dumpster fire, but the arguments are fun. And I love it when people go crazy about the Celtics this year. And when people argue about where LeBron James' place is on the greatest of all time. And it's, if you don't think LeBron is one of the two or three greatest players ever to play, you're not saying it. It's he is, and there's not much argument to be made about it, but this is the fun of the passion of what we do. Go crazy, be passionate about it. Talk about it. Have your opinions. This is what we miss the most. And it's why we, I think, in professional sports have tried so hard to get back. And, you know, here's behind the curtain. We're all pretending there's so much like negativity about the Celtics in Boston. There's arguments about the Lakers and when LeBron's going to get back and who's the best team. I think we have done a great job of almost pretending like this is a normal NBA season that's happening and not what will forever should be remembered as an asterisk season and what everybody is going through here without fans traveling and testing every day and players missing games because they've got the Celtics have had five or six guys get COVID during the season. We have no idea what the long-term effects of that are. We've got guys, you know, our best player, Jason Tatum, is on an inhaler because he had it in January, but you know what? That's real life. I'd rather people on sports radio go, man, the Celtics, this is what a terrible year. And how can they have a bad game? Because nobody wants to hear, well, maybe because Jason Tatum is on an inhaler and he had a bad day, you know, as a sort of a long hauler and he's trying to play an NBA game.
Yeah.
But we're doing the best we can so that people can have these arguments on talk radio. And again, I think all of us in all of our worlds are trying the best we can to simulate, you know, life in 2019 and before, and hopefully what life will soon be again.
No doubt. Yeah. I really appreciate that. One quick question before we go into the Fatherhood Quick Five, and I bet there's a lot of them, but just for you personally, it doesn't have to be the ultimate one, the number one, but it's like, is there a surreal moment where you're calling a game or something's happening with your career that you're just like, man, like, I can't believe this is happening to me. I bet there's a bunch, but like, would you want to share like one?
There are a bunch. I'll give you two, one at the start and one sort of at the height. In my fourth or fifth game in the league, I was 26 or 27, and I'm the television voice of the Minnesota Timberwolves, and I'm in the NBA, which is strange enough for me because people always ask me, what was your number one sport? And I really couldn't answer that as a play-by-play guy and a fan coming up. But I knew basketball was a distant number four. And now I recognize it's going to be the first line of my obituary. I am living it. I understand that. But I was never a basketball guy, because when you're growing up in New York, you kind of have to choose hockey or basketball, because you can't watch everything at the same, you know, the Knicks are always playing at the same time the Rangers are, and blah, blah, blah. So I always assumed I was going to go in that direction. But here I am, five or six games into my NBA career, and I'm on the court, and the Timberwolves are playing the Lakers that night. And I'm looking around. There's a lot of standing around waiting to work. You're waiting to do your stand up before the game. And I look over, I'm glancing over my shoulder, and you just have that, huh, that's Chick Hearn over there. And this is a legend, people who don't know, the legendary voice of the LA Lakers, who had been in the league forever, held, did thousands and thousands of games, just iconic guy. And your thought bubble is, that's Chick Hearn. I wonder what he's doing over there. And then you realize, he's doing the same job you're supposed to be doing. So why don't you pay attention, you moron, and like get ready to do your show, because he's now doing that job. But I think what the one I always tell, and there's some, you know, a million classic games now, and the Celtics obviously have been fortunate enough to do a couple of NBA finals. In game seven, again, doing a game seven of the NBA finals in 2010, and you're courtside at Staples Center, and every celebrity you can think of, celebrities always come out for the Laker games. But when it got to the finals, you're looking over and there's, you know, Eddie Murphy and Schwarzenegger and whatever, and they're just hanging out talking. It's like pretty insane. And they're all sitting now behind you.
Yeah.
Because you are, we're not courtside in too many places anymore, but we were with the Lakers for a lot of years. We're courtside here. And Doris Burke, a great friend and, you know, a phenomenal analyst, now Hall of Famer herself, is sitting next to me for the games in LA. And during the first quarter of game, during the, each timeout, they bring stat sheets and they hand them out along press row, the current box score. Doris gets up to interview Doc because it's the end of the first quarter. You do the coach's interview, the things you always see coming out of commercials. And they put the stat sheets in front of us. And we've been sitting next to each other the entire series. And I just took mine. I flipped it over to the blank side. And I drew two circles, one very big circle and one little tiny circle. And I put it in front of her. And on the big circle, I wrote world. And the little circle, I wrote us. Because we had been kicking each other under the table like 12-year-olds that we're sitting courtside for game seven, even though we're working. This is game seven of the NBA finals. The whole world is watching and we're right in the middle of it. And if you can, again, kind of bring it all back to fatherhood, right? Like be in the moment, be aware of it. And I remember, you know, during 2008, I really thought the Celtics were going to win. I felt during the season they were going to win. I knew I was documenting something that was going to live for a long time. You don't want to get carried away with that because you want to deliver it as it's happening. But you know, I think I remember thinking before the finals in 2010, I think this is going to go seven games. And I just remember that day, just walking around that day. This is game seven of NBA finals. And Celtics may never get here again. Late, you never know. But
yeah,
10, 15 years from now, I'm going to be on a podcast with somebody. What's a podcast? 2010. But I'm going to be on a podcast and someone's going to ask me about doing a game seven of the NBA finals. And that becomes a moment. And you know, and there's from 08 to get the championship ring, people always want to like, you know, try on the, that was fun show and tell for a while when you got championship ring. That I was single at the time, so that was when I got the ring, that was always the night, you know, when you're wearing it the first couple of weeks, it's like, oh hey, got
the ring. well played, sir. Nice. Appreciate you sharing that. Now we got the fatherhood quick five. Favorite family movie? Do you guys have one?
You know, it's changed over the years. You know, with my son, he became attached to the movie Miracle, which is amazing because I lived through that at the age that he is now.
Oh, cool.
And he just became obsessed with it. And then because we're in Boston, years later, I was able to, I bought him the USA, the Lake Placid 1980 jersey, and he had it on, and we've run into Michael Ruzzioni at a BU game and Jack O'Callaghan. So I've got like pictures of him in the jersey with like two of the guys on that team. So that's usually the first one I say.
Love it. Favorite family song, or is there an artist you couldn't wait to introduce your son to?
Ooh, that's a really good one, because there have been so many. And he's, I'll tell you what's happened. I'll take that question in a different way, because he actually started listening because his stepmom was listening to Hamilton all the time.
Okay.
And he has become, like a lot of kids, as it turns out, obsessed with Hamilton to the point that he has memorized it. If I'm like going through a song and I say the instead of the or whatever. Like, he's like, that's wrong. That's not it. And I'm like, there's 38,000 words in Hamilton. How can you possibly have it memorized?
Yeah.
Every once in a while, it's like, go to your room. You're 9. You shouldn't have Hamilton memorized. Go do something else. Go play with your...
Love it. Describe the perfect family vacation. Where would it be?
We've had a bunch of them. I'm lucky enough to, and it's funny, we haven't been able to get there during the pandemic. We haven't been there in a couple of years. When I was younger, I always loved Canada. And I always loved going to Canada and Western Canada. And I have a place, which I rent out. I haven't been there in a couple of years, in near Banff, in near Calgary, about an hour from Calgary. And when Jack was younger, and eventually we'll get back, but we'd go there, you know, once a year and just get a week up in the mountains, which is, for a kid who grew up in Greenwich Village, that's about as anti-Greenwich Village as you can get, just with the spectacular scenery. So we've had some amazing times out there.
Nice. Very cool. And I think maybe it is Game 7, but favorite game, favorite series you've called, was it like the Celtics Lakers series?
That's always a tough one, right? When you've done so many, I tend to fall back on, because it's sort of where you are in your life and your career and kind of a next step game. It was a great classic game that, you know, in my own world was to me, like, I'm going to the next level in my profession. But the 7th game in the 2nd round between the Celtics and the Cavaliers in 2008, when LeBron James and Paul Pierce had that duel. And I think we grew up, and when I say Bird versus Dominique, you'll immediately know what I'm right. Yep. You'll know what I'm talking about. And I remember, you know, in real time as it was going on, I was like, this is happening now. Bird Dominique is happening here. It's the 7th game. You really felt, if the Cleveland wasn't that good that year, but this is LeBron at 23 years old. He's at the height of his athleticism. And you have to, if the Celtics could get through LeBron, they were going to win the championship. And to his unbelievable credit, he took this amazing Celtics team just virtually by himself to a Game 7, to the final minutes of a Game 7. But you knew, there are times, you know, in the middle of a game that it will be a game you'll be talking about 20 years from now. And at that point, just like your job in those games as a player isn't to let me take the world on my shoulders and make this spectacular play. It's to do what you've always been trained to do. Make the correct play, make the right call, document the moment as it's happening. But it's funny, when you watch back those games, I'm still courtside. That was the last year we were courtside in Boston. And you can just see my eyes are just, you're talking about being in the moment. Like, your eyes are just extra wide because you instinctively know you're sort of, you're in the middle of it.
Love it. And lastly, top 3 words you hope your son uses to describe you as a dad.
I hope he's proud. I hope that he thinks that his dad did the best that he could, and that he always stuck up for him and did everything he could to give him the best possible life. And I hope that he thinks of me as a dad when he is a dad.
Oh, nice. One day. Yeah, great. I love that right there. The last one was perfect, man. People, make sure you follow Sean on Twitter at Sean Granny P. BP, play-by-play, in case you guys want to know. And also check him out on Celtics Games and just follow him. He's a great follow on Twitter and social media. Sean, I know, very busy guy. I appreciate your thoughts on fatherhood. I appreciate the storytelling for sports. Big fan of yours, and I wish you and your family continued success, sir.
I appreciate it. Anytime.
Thanks for listening to the Art of Fatherhood podcast. Leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts and go to theartoffatherhood.net.